This is Jude Costello, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona with The Week magazine of August 14th. U.S. low on missiles as Trump seeks exit from Iran. President Trump claimed that a deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and end the war with Iran was close at hand, as multiple news outlets reported that the U.S. military was running perilously low on long-range precision missiles and missile interceptors as a result of the five-month conflict. As the week went to press, Iran said it was in the final stages of negotiating a deal with Oman that would see the strait, a vital conduit for Middle Eastern oil, reopen under joint control. No tolls or service fees, a major U.S. sticking point, would be charged for at least 60 days under the deal, Axios reported. Any agreement would be dependent on the U.S. lifting its naval blockade of Iran's ports. In a familiar pattern that has emerged since the start of the war in February, Trump vowed to unleash military terror on Iran before citing diplomatic progress on the strait and Iran's nuclear program as a reason for stepping back. Amid the negotiations, Reuters reported the U.S. military had used most of its stockpile of highly accurate long-range missiles. Three sources told the outlet that virtually all of the Army's long-range munitions, including Army tactical missile systems and precision strike missiles, had been fired, raising concerns about America's readiness for future conflicts. Meanwhile, CNN reported that air defense systems were dangerously depleted, with the military having used close to 80% of its THAAD interceptors and half of its Patriot interceptors. Trump insisted that the U.S. has far more munitions than anyone in the world, and far more than we need. There are reasons to be skeptical about the potential longevity of any strait deal, said Tim Lister in CNN.com. Iran's hardline Revolutionary Guard is absent from negotiations and would have to sign off on any deal. And the fact remains that the U.S. and Iran have irreconcilable agendas. Control or supervision of the strait is now a red line for Tehran, but the prospect of such leverage is unacceptable in Washington, Abu Dhabi, and Riyadh. Iran believes it has the upper hand, said Erica Solomon in the New York Times. To the mullahs, Trump backing down from a threatened military escalation yet again telegraphs to the world that they are not the ones who fear war. Trump is. The Iranians believe they've found the world's Achilles heel in the critical energy facilities and waterways that sit across the Persian Gulf, and which Iran has shown it can damage and shut down with drones, ballistic missiles, and help from regional allies. The mullahs are not about to give that power up, and Trump doesn't fully grasp how they refuse to be bullied or cowed. As Trump swears Iran is eager for a deal, investigators believe Tehran is behind a recent wave of cyber attacks on municipal water supplies across the U.S., said Dan DeLuce in NBCNews.com. The administration confirmed that malicious cyber actors had attacked water operations in seven states, including Minnesota, Michigan, and New Jersey. The breaches follow warnings from U.S. officials that Iran-backed hackers were targeting the nation's critical infrastructure. But Trump dismissed the idea that Iran was involved, blaming the Minnesota attacks on the state's Democratic governor, Tim Walz. Meanwhile, an alarming email sent by military commanders shows how the Trump administration is floundering in its hunt for an off-ramp, said Rachel E. Van Landingham in MS.now. In what we can only wish was satire, CNN reported that U.S. Central Command emailed military analysts seeking creative and unconventional ways to pressure and punish Iran. It's close to a straightforward admission that our plan in Iran is failing, and it cannot be overstated that sending out such solicitations is not how professional, competent militaries achieve success. Trump's mandate now is to find the least bad way out, said Jonah Shep in New York. Under pressure from the public, his party and Gulf allies, who beseeched him to not escalate the conflict, he wants and needs to end this war. But short of a ground campaign, he has no realistic path to anything he can cast as a win. With Iran empowered by its newfound leverage over the strait and willing to absorb Trump's bombs, even a return to the pre-war status quo, with an open strait and restrictions on uranium enrichment akin to what Iran agreed to in 2015, seems hopeless. At this point, it's no longer a matter of if he'll lose this war, but how. El Sayed squeaks out Michigan primary win. Progressive firebrand Abdul El Sayed narrowly defeated establishment-backed Representative Haley Stevens in Michigan's Democratic Senate primary in a race viewed by many political observers as a referendum on the party's identity. That fight turned out to be much closer than polling suggested. El Sayed, a former public health official endorsed by independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York, used his campaign as a litmus test for Democratic support of Israel and blasted Stevens for receiving more than $30 million, about half her advertising funding, from the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, IPAC. Stevens said El Sayed, who would become the first Muslim U.S. senator if he wins in November, wants to blame all of your problems on Jewish Americans. After his victory was confirmed, El Sayed called on Michigan Democrats to mend fences ahead of his race against the GOP nominee, former Representative Mike Rogers. Another Michigan progressive, William Lawrence, won his Democratic primary in a battleground House district following a campaign that focused heavily on opposing data centers. But the party's leftward momentum stalled in St. Louis, where Missouri Representative Wesley Bell defeated his challenger, former Representative Cori Bush, in a House primary. A pro-Israel moderate, Bell unseated Bush in 2024 after she became one of the first sitting lawmakers to call Israel's war in Gaza a genocide. Following that loss, Bush vowed to run again and warned IPAC that she would tear your kingdom down. Bell won by more than 20 points. El Sayed's win was not the resounding victory in the Democratic Civil War he had anticipated, said Adam Wren in Politico. He was confident throughout the race, bragging about feeling no stress as voting began. Can you blame him? Some polls gave him a double-digit lead, but in the end, Stevens lost by only a point, thanks to strong support from Black and lower-income voters. Still, it was an impressive effort from the grassroots El Sayed, who was outspent by Stevens by almost $60 million. Are Democrats playing for fun or playing to win? Asked Kevin D. Williamson in the Dispatch. defeating Rogers, the GOP's bland Trump factotum, in November ought to have been pretty easy. But it won't be after Democrats nominated El Sayed, a left-wing goofball who fixates on Jews, parties with podcaster and Hamas apologist Hassan Piker, and advocates a state monopoly health care system that would strip Michigan union members of cherished benefits. In a must-win battleground state, polls show he's trailing Rogers 46% to 43%. Stevens may have been a safer bet, said William Crystal in The Bulwark. But once the bitterness of the primary subsides, the national environment will still help the Democratic nominee. It's Rogers, not El Sayed, who's tainted by the historically unpopular President Trump. If El Sayed leaves his squabbles with fellow Democrats for another day and sticks to the fundamentals of fighting Trump, he can help them flip the Senate. Spokane, arson arrest. A man who went to prison for killing his father in 2010 was charged with intentionally starting the largest of three wildfires that are ravaging eastern Washington state and forcing tens of thousands of people from their homes. Law enforcement in Spokane County charged Aaron Farinacci, 37, with one count of first-degree arson for allegedly igniting grass with a match or a butane lighter, sparking the Old Trails fire, which has since destroyed about 700 homes. Farinacci was questioned by law enforcement during two fire investigations last year. He was released from prison in 2020 after serving nearly a decade for fatally shooting his father during an argument about washing dishes. More than 10,000 acres have gone up in flames since the three fires started. The blazes have been whipped up by strong winds and high temperatures. It's a nightmare situation, said Governor Bob Ferguson. Twin Falls, Idaho, In-N-Out shooting. A gunman opened fire at a busy In-N-Out burger restaurant, leaving six people wounded and three dead. Suspected attacker Chad Williams died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Authorities described a chaotic scene of people scrambling to safety after Williams, 24, began firing a large rifle near a heavily trafficked shopping center. They praised the heroic action of two bystanders, an off-duty state trooper and a private citizen, who returned fire, forcing Williams to take cover. Those killed included an In-N-Out employee, and company president Lindsay Snyder said in a statement that the worker had been taking care of our most important asset, our customers, when her life was taken by a disgusting human who doesn't value the lives of others or his own. Jordan Salinas, one of the bystanders who fired at Williams, told ABC News that the suspect appeared calm initially, but his demeanor changed once shots were fired at him. All that bravado immediately crumbled, Salinas said. Jefferson City, Missouri, GOP losses. Voters in Missouri and Kansas rejected Republican efforts that would have made it easier to ban abortions. In Kansas, over 60% of voters declined to pass a ballot measure to start electing state Supreme Court justices rather than appointing them. The proposal was pushed by anti-abortion advocates, frustrated by the court's makeup of justices appointed by Democratic governors of the state where abortion is legal. Abortion access also likely factored into a whopping 80% of Missourians spurning a ballot measure seeking to make it harder to amend the state's constitution. The state's Republican-controlled legislature was hoping to end a process used in recent years to grant abortion rights. Missouri's Secretary of State, however, refused to certify a citizens' petition seeking a November referendum on the state's newly gerrymandered congressional district map, which flips a Kansas City district in Republicans' favor. Hendersonville, North Carolina. House harassment. Representative Chuck Edwards, Republican of North Carolina, abandoned his reelection bid after the House Ethics Committee found substantial reason to believe he sexually harassed female employees. Edwards, a married 65-year-old, engaged in persistent, unprofessional, and inappropriate conduct towards two young female staffers, the committee's report concluded. He gave them gifts ranging from the extravagant, vacations, designer bags, electronics, jewelry worth over $1,000, to the bizarre, such as matching handguns, a robotic vacuum, and a KitchenAid mixer. Edwards denied any wrongdoing. The committee also began investigating Representative Max Miller, Republican of Ohio, a former Trump aide who faces domestic violence accusations. Miller has vowed to remain in the race, even though President Trump told him things aren't looking good, Axios reported. Washington, D.C., skyline disrupted. President Trump's proposed 250-foot triumphal arch would dramatically alter the skyline of Washington, D.C. by blocking views at dozens of historic sites, according to analysts from the National Park Service. The report listed 37 sites that would be adversely affected by the gilded arch, which would overshadow the graves of fallen soldiers at Arlington National Cemetery and block the corridor, designed to symbolize the reunification of the North and South, between the Lincoln Memorial and Robert E. Lee's Arlington House. Taller than the Capitol's legal height limits allow, the proposed monument is one of 18 major construction projects Trump has initiated in Washington during his second term. A White House official defended the project, saying it would enhance the visitor experience at Arlington National Cemetery. Retired Army officer Gary Langston disagreed, saying that veterans who visited the grave sites of fallen fellow service members will look up and see a viewing stand with tourists looking down on you. Ottawa boycotting the U.S. Canadians dramatically cut back on their travel to the U.S. last year after President Trump's tariffs and annexation threats, government data shows. Canadians made 29 million trips to the U.S. in 2025, down from 39 million in 2024. The boycott has cost the U.S. over $2 billion in spending, money that went to other countries as Canadians chose vacation destinations in Europe and Asia instead. T.J. Rule, owner of Toronto's Golf Away Tours, told the Globe and Mail that while in 2024 the U.S. accounted for some 13% of his bookings, this year U.S. tours make up just 0.05%. People still want warm temperatures, he said, but they are typically looking at Portugal and Spain. Ceuta, Spain. Border stampede. More than 70,000 people rushed across the border from Morocco into Spain's North African territory of Ceuta, swimming and climbing over barbed wire fences in a desperate attempt to reach European soil. The exodus was sparked by viral videos falsely claiming that a recent Spanish court ruling would allow Moroccans to stay. Spain sent soldiers to restore order in the overwhelmed city, which has a resident population of 80,000, and they returned nearly all the migrants to Morocco within a few days. While EU countries must offer asylum hearings to incoming migrants, the exclaves of Ceuta and Melilla, tiny patches of land just across the Strait of Gibraltar that Spain has held for centuries, have different rules. During the mayhem, at least 88 people died from drowning or being crushed in the stampede. Ceuta's Mayor President Juan Jesus Vivas said the atrocity was encouraged or permitted by Morocco, which may have been trying to punish Madrid for its rapprochement with Morocco's arch-rival Algeria. The Moroccan government flatly denied involvement. Far-right parties in Europe shared images of the chaos, some fake, such as one purporting to show Moroccan police throwing rocks at returning migrants, and blamed it on Spain's left-wing Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, who has offered a path to legal residency for some 500,000 undocumented workers. Several members of the Trump administration, which is angry at Spain for opposing the Iran war and pleased with Morocco for joining Trump's Gaza Board of Peace, also shared scenes of the influx. Vice President J.D. Vance posted, "Thank God at POTUS was elected and our country's border no longer looks like this." Havana, here come the spies. The Trump administration has sent extra intelligence assets into Cuba in recent months as it increases pressure to try to topple the island's communist government, Politico reported. The expanded CIA presence could be a tactical step to prepare for military action. Last month, a State Department report warned that China had been expanding its own intelligence gathering facilities in Cuba, which sits 90 miles from Florida and offers an ideal vantage point to monitor American military activity. The uncertainty over U.S. intentions has been fraying nerves. There was another island-wide blackout caused by the U.S. blockade of oil shipments, and many people slept along Havana's seawall, the Malecón, seeking relief from the heat. "Things are only getting worse," said Havana resident Alexi Rios Garcia. Kyiv, desperate for interceptors. Russia battered the Ukrainian capital with waves of ballistic missile attacks, taking advantage of the depletion of Ukraine's air defenses to blow up civilian sites like a train station, a brewery, and a postal warehouse. At least 17 people were killed. Ukraine is out of interceptors for its U.S.-made Patriot defense systems. "Interceptors would have saved the lives of those killed today," said President Volodymyr Zelensky. "It is very important that our partners understand that delays in supplying them or an unwillingness to provide anti-ballistic systems lead directly to such horrific casualties." Meanwhile, Russia said Ukraine was behind a bombing at a Moscow restaurant where General Alexander Chayko was celebrating his birthday. Chayko was not killed, but five others were. People, how Astin avoided the child star trap. Sean Astin followed in his mother's footsteps, but carefully, said Steve Rose in The Guardian of the UK. Patty Duke, who won an Oscar at age 16 for portraying Helen Keller in The Miracle Worker, was taken into the care of talent agents at 8, given drugs and alcohol, and abused sexually and financially. But she never discouraged her son from pursuing acting. At 13, he took the lead role in The Goonies, 1985. "I think she wanted to rectify the pain of her childhood by raising a child who could have a similar experience absent that trauma," says Astin. Duke was fiercely protective of her son on set. "She was only 4'11", but scared the shit out of people. And it worked. Astin avoided the psychological damage suffered by many of his fellow child stars, including his Goonies co-star Corey Feldman, who later alleged childhood sexual abuse in Hollywood and struggled with substance abuse. "I was never interested in drugs and alcohol or wild promiscuity. I got married at 21. Now 55, Astin, best known for playing Samwise Gamgee in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, is the president of SAG-AFTRA, the modern version of the Hollywood Union that Duke led in the 1980s. "I don't expect that anyone would look at me and think he's unflappably perfect, but I like the idea that people would look at me and go, 'Wow, he sort of put his shit together.'" Defunding America's best idea. Trump administration policies have left many national parks short on staff and money. How popular is the parks system? The National Park Service recorded some 323 million visits to its 433 parks, properties, battlefields, and monuments last year. That's a slight drop from 2024's all-time high of 332 million, but more than the combined attendance of professional football, baseball, basketball, NASCAR, soccer, and Disney theme parks. Established in 1916, the NPS is today one of America's most beloved institutions. A 2024 Pew Research Center survey found that 76% of Americans, including overwhelming majorities of both Republicans and Democrats, view it favorably, a higher share than for any other federal agency. But the NPS, which manages more than 85 million acres across the U.S., now faces an uncertain future because of staffing cuts and the reallocation of critical funds by the Trump administration. Author and conservationist Wallace Stegner once declared national parks America's best idea, but the administration is treating our treasures like anything but, said John Garder of the nonprofit National Parks Conservation Association, NPCA. How many national park workers have been laid off? The agency has lost nearly 25% of its permanent workforce, over 4,000 positions, since the start of the second Trump administration, according to the NPCA. About 1,000 parks employees with probationary status were fired in early 2025, while senior staffers have been let go through deferred resignation and early retirement programs. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, who oversees the NPS, said the agency can keep up standards with a reduced workforce by getting staff to focus on hands-on jobs such as clearing trails. "I want more of that," he said. "I want less overhead." Staffers who traditionally work behind the scenes have been pushed into more frontline roles. At Yosemite National Park, a shortage of custodial workers in spring 2025 meant the park's scientists, IT specialists, and senior management had to take shifts cleaning toilets. Personnel cuts and delays in hiring seasonal workers have caused backups at entry gates, which at some big parks have been exacerbated by the scrapping of timed entry reservation systems. "The traffic reminded me of L.A. at rush hour," said Sacramento resident Walter Meyer, who visited Yosemite in April. Are these cuts affecting park safety? Dive team operations were quietly suspended at Southern Nevada's Lake Mead National Recreation Area in May because of staffing shortages and the need for more training and equipment. The lake has consistently ranked as one of the deadliest sites managed by the NPS, with an average of 20 people dying in the park annually, mostly by drowning. One of the dive team's responsibilities is recovering the bodies of drowning victims. An NPS employee at Yosemite told The Guardian that a lack of workers last year meant visitors could wreck the park with no consequence and get away with doing potentially dangerous things, such as not properly storing their food. We don't want bears eating people food because they can get aggressive, the staffer said. I worry the park will degrade to the point where safety is a problem. And the problems faced by national parks have only grown this year as President Trump redirected funding toward his preferred projects. How is Trump spending that money? At least $90 million from visitor entry fees to parks such as Big Bend and Yellowstone has been diverted to Washington, D.C., the Washington Post reported in early June. Much of that cash went toward Trump-requested beautification projects ahead of the country's 250th birthday celebrations, including $76 million for fountain repairs and for the botched relining of the Lincoln Memorial Reflecting Pool. Entry fees were used to fund a 4th of July fireworks display in the Capitol. It cost $1.6 million, more than five times the bill in past years. NPS also spent $689,232 this spring to rip up the walkway connecting the Oval Office to the White House residence, a 45-second commute. Trump didn't like the historic beige Tennessee flagstone and has replaced it with polished black African granite carved in Italy. Park advocates say all that cash would have been better spent tackling the NPS's $24 billion backlog of needed infrastructure repairs and improvements. That is not how it was designed to work, said the NPCA's Ed Stearley. It shouldn't just be all at one park at the expense of the entire national park system. Are many parks missing out on funding? More than 900 NPS projects that were slated to be funded this year have yet to receive money. They include a $1.5 million roof replacement at the Yellowstone Center for Resources, which is dealing with water leaks and pest invasions. Guardrails won't be replaced along a cliff edge deemed a significant safety hazard for visitors at Colorado's Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park, and crumbling walls along a scenic drive won't be fixed at Virginia's Shenandoah National Park. At Crater Lake in Oregon, potholes riddle the main drive, and two housing units for employees have been shuttered because of mold. Is anyone trying to protect the NPS? Some members of Congress are speaking out, as are NPS staffers. When the Trump administration started shrinking the workforce, a group of off-duty and former employees formed Resistance Rangers to document NPS's cuts and policy changes, while fired workers flew an upside-down American flag, a distress sign, at Yosemite. Meanwhile, lawmakers in Washington have rejected plans in Trump's 2027 budget to lay off nearly 3,000 more NPS workers and shrink the agency's budget from $3.2 billion to $2.2 billion. No lawmaker wants to be responsible for defunding such a beloved agency. Plus, said Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, I just need to know that I've got people out in the park who are keeping the bears at bay. Best columns of the U.S. Trump's denial of his unpopularity. President Trump's poll numbers have dropped to a historic low, said Peter Baker in the New York Times, but don't expect him to change course. Multiple polls find that Trump's approval has sunk to about 33%, the lowest for any president since Richard Nixon just before he resigned over Watergate. Trump's abysmal numbers, driven down by rising gas prices, the Iran war, and corruption, would throw a normal White House into panic mode, prompting cabinet firings and policy changes. And outside the White House, the polls have Republicans increasingly rattled as they dread a Democratic wave that could cost them the House and possibly even the Senate in November. But Trump is simply denying his unpopularity, insisting his approval is at 60% to 65%. Whether he believes such numbers or not, he continues to pursue highly unpopular legacy projects like his White House ballroom and a massive triumphal arch. Trump has always governed as if he were a more popular president, even though he's never won 50% of the vote in any election or cracked a 50% approval rating. Now, even at the nadir of his presidency, Trump is doubling down, guided only by his own impulses and instincts. Best columns of Europe. European fires, a failure to adapt. The images from France and Spain are nightmarish, said Elena Erdmann and Benja Zer in Die Zeit of Germany. Orange skies, a colossal mass of smoke over the beach, vacationers fleeing the flames. The Gironde fire, which ripped across the countryside on France's Atlantic coast near Bordeaux, scorched an area over 160 square miles. It was France's largest wildfire on record and the first to generate fire clouds, thunderstorms of flame that can send incendiary winds whipping miles ahead of the burn line. European firefighters have never trained for such a phenomenon. In Spain, the flames raced toward Madrid faster than fire crews could keep up, forcing the government to declare a national emergency. Hundreds of thousands of people had to be evacuated, leaving behind pets and possessions. More fires raged in Portugal, Greece, Italy, even Germany. The continent is all dry tinder because of the wet spring and dry summer. Heavy spring rains fed thick grasses and shrubs that dried to a crisp in successive heat waves. And as the planet warms, such summers of fire will be our new normal. This year must be the turning point when we finally change our ways, said Le Monde of France in an editorial. With Europe the fastest warming continent, fire seasons will only get worse. Yet we continue to send our firefighters into these conflagrations unprepared, without adequate aerial support. Fully 7 of the 12 Canadair Super Scoopers in France's firefighting fleet are out of service this year, despite warnings from pilots that every craft would be needed. No wonder dozens of firefighters have been injured and several killed. Buying more planes is just the start, said Stefan Butelsbacher in Die Welt of Germany. We should also be thinning dense forests and creating fire breaks. But our politicians, even the supposedly environmentalist Greens, would rather obsess over niche issues. As fire season loomed this year, the European Parliament couldn't be bothered to discuss preparedness. It was too busy arguing about whether plant-based meat substitutes should be allowed to be called veggie burgers. There's no magic bullet, said Francisco Martin Azcarate in El País of Spain. Europe was once a patchwork of managed farmlands with livestock that ate everything that could burn. But with urbanization, we abandoned the countryside and reforested, increasing our exposure to risk by nestling houses among the trees. It's inexcusable, said Barbara de Boucher in De Morgan of Belgium. If the intelligence services warned us that terrorists were plotting an attack and our leaders did nothing, we would be white hot with rage and drive them out with tar and feathers. Yet scientists warned us decades ago that if we kept burning fossil fuels, we would see headlines like thousands of heat deaths and power grid collapses, and here we are having done nothing to prevent it. We should not normalize a world where rescue crews come across the charred bodies of tourists or find elderly people dead in sweltering apartments, yet we already have. The most chilling thing about this sweltering summer is the lack of anger. We are here because of our leaders' criminal negligence. Will we hold them to account? Corruption, a very profitable presidency. In the second Trump administration, the palms couldn't be greasier, said Daniel W. Dresner in his Substack newsletter. A Wall Street Journal story revealed the epic scale of President Trump's corruption, detailing how he has extracted more than $800 million from companies and donors since returning to office. Top Trump fundraiser Meredith O'Rourke, whom he's nicknamed the Princess of Darkness, will call companies on the president's orders and say, "The boss wants this money." O'Rourke has gotten results. SoftBank handed over $50 million for Trump's presidential library, Apple $25 million for his White House ballroom, and Meta $10 million for a Trump-aligned nonprofit. Donors understand that such investments might secure them more favorable treatment. Trump last month renewed a tariff exemption for natural diamonds just weeks after a Belgian diamond group gifted him a watch-size 18-karat gold ring bearing two large diamond T's. And all this graft is on top of the $2.2 billion Trump made in 2025 alone from a variety of shakedowns and grifts, including cryptocurrency schemes and real estate deals with Arab tyrants. The Trump family is about to rake in even more, said the Washington Examiner in an editorial. Its media venture launched Truth API, which for up to $100,000 a month will give subscribers millisecond faster access to the president's Truth Social posts. The ability to trade early on market-moving information can generate big profits. A Trump post in April 2025 announcing a tariff pause sent the S&P 500 soaring 9.5%, and hedge funds and financial institutions will likely pay for the service, if only to stay competitive with other traders. The whole concept is so corrupt you almost struggle to get your head around it, said Jim Swift in The Bulwark. Trump is charging for something, knowledge of government actions, that should belong freely to Americans. This is pure rent seeking. Cracking down on Trump's corruption should be a winning message for Democrats in the midterms, said James Downey in MS.Now. A CNN SSRS poll found that nearly two-thirds of Americans think Trump has gone too far in pursuing his personal business interests. But half of voters, including two-thirds of independents, think neither party is fighting the rot in Washington. After a decade of Trump's grifting, Democrats might find those numbers baffling. But the public's frustration is understandable. Congress has not passed a major ethics reform in decades, and a congressional stock trading ban remained in purgatory under Democratic and GOP-controlled Congresses. Democrats can make Trump's graft an election-defining issue, but then they must do something about it. Fauci, the GOP's COVID scapegoat. COVID killed more than 1.1 million Americans, but in the twisted narrative that has become Republican Party dogma, said Will Salatin in The Bulwark, the villain isn't Trump, China, or even the virus. It's Anthony Fauci. At a Senate committee hearing, Republicans demonized and slandered Fauci, the now retired director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, who served the public under seven presidents back to Ronald Reagan. Several senators suggested Fauci helped China create the virus in a lab, even though studies have traced its probable origin to animals in the Wuhan wet market. Representative Anna Paulina Luna compared Fauci to Nazi Dr. Joseph Mengele. Senator Ron Johnson ludicrously suggested COVID vaccines were experimental gene therapy that killed millions of Americans. Fauci declined to answer questions on the grounds that committee chair Rand Paul had vowed to use his testimony to put him in prison. Why the witch hunt? For Trump's GOP, someone has to be blamed for what went wrong in the pandemic, and it can't be the party's God King. Fauci and other health officials did make mistakes, said Megan McArdle in the Washington Post. The messaging on masking was muddled, and schools stayed closed longer than they had to. But public health experts were doing the best they could in an unprecedented disaster. What we need is the kind of systematic, nonpartisan, and non-punitive investigation that followed previous national crises, not a mean-spirited blame game that serves only to make us less prepared for the next pandemic. The official who really bungled the pandemic was the man in charge, Donald J. Trump, said Molly Olmsted in Slate. But with Republicans likely to take a beating in November, they're using the bogeyman Fauci as a tool to distract and energize their fractured base. As an alternative to Fauci and science, said Nick Cotoggio in the Dispatch, Trump and his populist allies are offering witch doctor lunatics. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. denied that COVID vaccines, which saved millions of lives, did more good than harm, and claimed that at the height of the pandemic, ICUs were empty all over the country, including in New York. Rather than a serious effort to explore what went wrong with COVID, Republicans are giving us crackpot conspiracy theories, quack miracle cures like ivermectin, and pseudo-experts with brain worms. Literally. Health and science. Ditch your fallopian tubes. Most ovarian cancers don't actually start in the ovaries. Around 80% of them, including nearly all the fatal cases, are actually cancers of the fallopian tubes, the slender ducts that ferry eggs to the uterus. That is significant, reports the New York Times, because ovarian cancer is among the deadliest malignancies. Screening methods generally can't catch it early enough to make a difference, and by the time symptoms like bloating appear, it has usually spread. Removing the fallopian tubes, though, removes 80% of the cancer risk. The procedure takes just 5 minutes and can be tacked onto almost any abdominal surgery, from a hysterectomy to a hernia repair. The American Cancer Society is planning a campaign to spread the word, but so far few women are aware of this easy preventive measure. One oncologist looked at old records and realized that fully a quarter of her cancer patients had undergone an earlier surgery. They could have had the tubes removed back then had the option been offered. This is one of the most critical discoveries in my lifetime, says oncologist Rebecca Stone. It should be standard of care. Review of films. A Spider-Man surprise. Hollywood roars back. Perhaps reports of moviegoing's death have been greatly exaggerated, said Katsi Stefan in the New York Post. Spider-Man Brand New Day surprised many Hollywood observers when it scored an all-time record $360 million opening weekend in North America, dethroning 2019's Avengers Endgame, and helping make the weekend's worldwide haul for all movies the most lucrative in history. The Odyssey, in its third week, chipped in $51 million at home and $136 million globally. Throw in contributions from fellow summer hits Toy Story 5, The Devil Wears Prada 2, and Obsession, and you have the healthiest box office year in recent memory, with theaters returning to or even outpacing pre-pandemic numbers. So how did this latest Spider-Man avoid the superhero fatigue that's bedeviled movies such as this summer's Supergirl? Asked Scott Mendelson in Puck. In short, it's the star power. Tom Holland and Zendaya, the real-life couple who've played Peter Parker and his longtime girlfriend MJ since 2017, have together hit a peak in popularity. Sony has meanwhile downplayed the movie's ties to the declining Marvel Cinematic Universe and played up how a sacrifice Peter made in the previous Spider-Man movie put the relationship to a supreme test. For years, it was assumed by industry watchers that young people who've grown up in the streaming era would never embrace the theatrical experience, said Rebecca Rubin and Brent Lang in Variety. Everyone had it wrong. Younger moviegoers are driving the comeback. A recent Fandango report revealed that 87% of Gen Zers had seen at least one movie in a theater during the previous year, compared with 70% of Gen Xers and 58% of baby boomers. With new Dune, Avengers, and Hunger Games entries due at year's end, 2026 is expected to look a lot like the pre-COVID era, which means, yes, people have fallen back in love with the silver screen. Medicare Part D. The cost of ending drug subsidies. Millions of older Americans who are already struggling with rising gas and food prices will soon have to pay more for prescription drugs, said Anna Wild Matthews in the Wall Street Journal. The Trump administration announced that it is scrapping a Biden-era subsidy program for Medicare drug plans, known as Part D, starting next year. The program, which this year will give insurers an estimated $3.6 billion to blunt increases in premiums, lowered average premiums by about 40% in 2025 for Part D's 25 million enrollees. About 75% of enrollees who today pay an average monthly premium of $36 will be hit with higher bills in 2027 because of the cancellation. The Trump administration said the subsidies encouraged insurers to hike rates, knowing the government would pick up the tab. Mehmet Oz, administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, said the insurance industry bailout was no longer needed and that the administration was working with pharma companies to lower drug costs. Letting these Medicare subsidies expire is the right thing to do, said the Washington Post in an editorial. The program began in 2024 with an administrative action by President Joe Biden with no authorization from Congress. It was always a band-aid for bad policy, not a long-term solution for health care costs. Rather than addressing why Part D premiums were going up, the subsidies shifted more of the bill to taxpayers. If a health policy can't work without taxpayers bailing out insurance companies when costs rise more than expected, the underlying policy is the problem, not the planned expiration of the bailout. The subsidy was always intended to be temporary, said Alisa Hyam in Newsweek. It was designed to limit volatility and variation in Part D premiums as insurers adapted to changes in the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, which reduced Medicare enrollees' out-of-pocket expenses and capped insulin and vaccine costs. Ultimately, more than half the subsidy money flowed to just one company, United Healthcare Group, which Oz called unacceptable. The cancellation comes at a curious time, said Miranda Yaver in MS.Now. Midterm elections are just around the corner, and Democrats are pressuring Republicans on affordability issues. And now, America's most reliable voting bloc will receive notice of higher health care costs, in most cases up to $20 more per month. That might not sound like a lot, but it matters greatly to seniors who live on fixed incomes. This policy shift undercuts Trump's expressed commitment to prescription drug affordability, especially because his other efforts, like the direct-to-consumer drug portal TrumpRx and most favored nation drug pricing, have shown little progress in actually lowering costs. As a political issue, Medicare should remain untouchable. The Trump administration is testing the third rail. Charity of the Week. Former first grade teacher Alvin Irby believes that the barbershop is a perfect reading environment for young black boys. Irby came up with the idea to start Barbershop Books in 2013 after seeing one of his students waiting for his haircut, bored and antsy, with nothing to read. It clicked for him why 83% of black fourth graders were not proficient readers. They did not have enough reading role models at school and at home. Recognizing the cultural importance of barbershops in black communities, Irby's organization has since equipped approximately 250 barbershops across the U.S. with over 50,000 free, stimulating, funny children's books aimed for young black audiences, while also training barbers to encourage reading for fun. Barbershop Books also recently launched Reading So Lit Summer, a virtual 2-week program taught by high school students that is designed to encourage more boys to read for fun. This is Jude Costello, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click On Demand Podcasts. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device. I'll be with you next week with The Week.